welcome to episode 86 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I am Anjin. I am a prisoner here in the Japans.
Oh, wait. No. Sorry, Matt. I'm Patrick Macias. I'm the author of the new book, Mondo Tokyo, Dispatches from a Secret Japan.
And I'm Matt Ault, the author of Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. And I am very disappointed that this isn't the Shogun podcast. That's what I signed up for. Have you been watching? It's really good.
Yeah, I've been watching the episodes weekly. I think we should do a recap at the end. Let's cash in our feelings. But they are pulling it off against all my better judgment, against all the ways I wanted the original to succeed. I think they're, my God, Matt, they're actually doing it.
I would say they're pulling it off with panache. They're pulling it off with, and I'm also, you know what? I'm going to save this. We'll save this for the next time. But it's good to see you again or hear you again since, oh, wow, all of 7 days ago. How's life?
It's been 2 weeks. We did the Hub episode, and then we talked to Alexander O. Smith about his work translating Dr. Slump. So yeah, we are a little bit backed up on the news here, but we do have some news you can use. And spring is in the air, Matt.
Yes.
I feel something's in the air, and it's pink and fluffy.
Kirby? You mean Kirby is in the air?
Hoshi no Kirby
is fluffy. I'm sorry if I sound a little, as the Japanese would say, low tension today. I had a Hanami. There was a cherry blossom party in Yoyogi Park yesterday with organized by Noah Smith of Noah Opinion on Twitter.
Not organized by Bubba Smith of Police Academy?
I should be so lucky. It was amusing in that the spring has sprung. It's like really, really warm in Tokyo right now, but the actual cherry blossoms have not blossomed. So everybody, many, many people, huge numbers of which were foreign because it's Yoyogi Park, were kind of gathered under these skeletal, very sad looking trees in the park, getting drunk for no particular reason because the flowers weren't out yet. But it was nice to see everyone and scream, which is why my throat is a little tired today.
You might want to see a doctor about that. Penicillin, I think, actually works for that, Matt.
What, you know, I could say some of my symptoms, but I don't think I'm allowed to on TV. You can't do that on television. So yeah, spring has started. Hanami season, I think it's going to be swinging into high gear this coming week and next weekend, probably around the time this podcast is airing.
I'll be excited to see those little pink guys out in force again. I'm still not really used to Hanami season. I mean, it's really astonishing. I mean, it's one thing to see pictures of it or like to see it in anime, but when you actually see like the whole horizon, like all pink and like flowing and stuff, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, there's some really cool spots in Tokyo where you can see it. You know, Yoyogi is really famous because it's so big. You know, there's places like Nakameguro has a lot along like the river there. You know, Kashiwa Park near Kichijoji is another big place. But you get out to the countryside and you can get there's some really huge, huge swaths of cherry blossoms out there. So, but 'tis the season. This is it to crack those now in season pink colored Asahi cans or I don't know, your beverage of choice underneath the blossoms. So hopefully I'll be recovered enough by next weekend to go do it again.
So to get into the news here, Matt, this was a bit of a shocker. I didn't see this one coming, but here's the headline. Macross finally lands streaming home at Disney Plus.
The majority of Macross anime library is heading to Disney Plus in 2024. The Macross website has revealed that 18 titles will be distributed exclusively on Disney Plus by the end of 2024 internationally, with only the Super Dimension Fortress Macross and the Super Dimension Fortress Macross. Do you remember love? Tagged for Japan only.
Macrossnolds? Are we talking about the Macross McDonald's crossover from the anime? Or do you mean the actual anime?
I'm talking about the Super Dimensional Fortress, Macross, Matt. Perhaps you've heard of it before. Would you like to maybe give us a recap of what Macross is and what the situation is?
Macross is a cartoon that was made for kids but was consumed by adults. Now, Macross was a 1982 television series that represents a really kind of turning point in anime culture in that it was the first production that was made by and for anime fans. Until that point, everybody involved in making anime was somebody who had professionally entered the anime industry. And of course, the people making Macross were professionals too. But they were sort of the first legion, shall we say, of prosumer. How would you put it? They're amateur. They're huge, huge. They're super fans who turned pro. And Macross is just chock full of homages and, you know, witty references to otaku culture. In fact, it's the first time I'm aware of that the word otaku is used in anime, albeit not as a slam against anime fans, but in the actual grammatical use of the term.
And it has a very youthful vibe, you know, with the appearance of like idol singers and kind of like city life and all these things.
Yes.
And a big hit, of course, localized and released in America as Robotech by Carl Masek, who came up in our previous episode.
Yes. You know, Japan didn't really have a widespread punk movement, but there's something kind of punky about Macross, just in the sense it's all these like young people sleeping under their desks getting this like crazy dream of theirs together. And yeah, like you said, it went global and it made a huge splash and introduced anime to an entire new generation of Xers, pretty much. It's like, that's like Gen X's drug of choice, I think. You know, you start to get into the millennials and you're getting more into that kind of 90s stuff, the Dragon Ball, the Sailor Moon, the Cowboy Bebop. But if you're Gen Xer and you are old and creaky, you very well may have gotten your start from Robotech if you didn't get it from Star Blazers or Voltron or something like that.
There's just one problem. The rights have been tied up and complicated in legal cases.
Japanese companies were not great at handling their rights back in the days, and Macrosses have always been kind of a total mess. Wouldn't you agree?
Sounds that way. I still don't really understand. There's a company called Big West. There's Harmony Gold in LA. There's Tatsunoko Studio Nue. It's sort of like the era of the Warring States. I don't really understand. Much like Shogun, I don't understand what's going on.
I think it was just so tough to get an animated series off the ground financially that you had to pull together all of these different stakeholders. You know, Studio Nue is doing the designs, you know, the actual like mecha designs and things like that. Then you have, you know, Big West is I don't even know what they are. Tatsunoko is an animation company, of course.
Big West is like a cowboy steakhouse.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? I don't, you know, I'm sure there are people who have dissected this down to the minutia, but the bottom line is that the rights have always been kind of this mishmash in Japan. They were sold or purchased by Harmony Gold, a company in the United States, who has like literally sat on them doing not much of anything except just constantly trying to spin off new Robotech sequels for the last 40 years. Is that a pretty accurate description?
There's a lot of bad comic books. There's a lot of bad toys. There's a lot of robotechnology out there on the shelves gathering dust.
So I was kind of excited when I saw, you know, I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would see Disney and Macross together in the same sentence.
Yeah. I mean, I'm wearing my Lion King t-shirt right now. It's all covered in chocolate and pizza stains, but I think that's okay given the circumstances. Anime, Disney, that's like one of the most complicated, that's even more complicated than my personal relationships.
Yeah, okay? Exactly. But
that is a really complicated relationship. And it's unusual that Macross ends up at Disney Plus, but that's the world we live in now because anime can move the needle during the streaming wars, I guess.
Well, as I believe I learned from a documentary film, first you get the Ghibli, then you get the power, then you lose Ghibli, and then you get Macross, I think. And then there's something about money and women, but right now we're at the Macross phase of that. Except what?
Oh, well, I saw this lineup. I saw this headline. I'm like, hey, that's pretty cool. I can watch Macross on Disney Plus anytime I want. There's just two catches this right? time, Matt. Disney Plus in the U.S. will not be carrying the original Macross series, nor the Do You Remember Love theatrical movie. This is like Star Wars without A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. What's the point?
You know, no offense to, you know, I don't judge, I don't kink shame. If you're into like Macross 7 or Macross Delta or any of the weird like later, you know, latter day Macross series, more power to you. They're not my thing. But like the idea that you would be releasing Macross without the original series that spawned it all, plus the 1984 movie that was a massive, massive moment that we should probably revisit when it comes to be summer, which it'll be the exact 40th anniversary of that this year, will it not? Will it not?
It will indeed. Yeah, it's the summer of love all over again.
It's kind of a bummer that you can't see that, the series and the original series and the movie. The movie is one of my absolute favorite anime productions of any kind of all time. It doesn't make a lot of sense plot-wise. It's kind of a mess, but it looks great. It sounds great. It is great.
It's got some iconic scenes in it, some great animation that holds up still to this day.
What is going on? How would you describe? So why do you think those two segments series are not in this lineup?
Well, Harmony Gold is sitting on the rights, aren't they? They want to make a Hollywood movie. That's what they've been trying to do for the last 40 years, right?
Oh, isn't it? Sick like burn. That? Yeah, no, it's true. It seems to be some kind of, you know, rights issue with the Americans, but it's like, you know, this is a major IP in Japan, and they must have signed some contract so ironclad 40 years ago that they still can't get out of it today, because it makes absolutely no sense Everybody signs weird contracts from time to time. Everybody gets into weird relationships from time to time. But I think we can all agree that this hasn't been the best relationship for Macross in the world for quite some time now.
In a way, kind of the good news here is that the original Macross series and the Macross movie will be available on Disney Plus in Japan. I think we made the right decision in renouncing our citizenship and moving exactly. here.
I didn't want to say anything, but the entire reason that I left America many, many years ago is because I knew that at some point Disney was going to get the rights to the Macross series.
Hopefully there's a clause in the contract that if they do eventually screen Macross on Disney Plus, they have to use the old Harmony Gold English theme song.
Soldier of warlords from deep space. Macross! Hurl through the night to this new place. Macross! Crushed and forgotten to Earth. Magically given rebirth here.
Yeah, fuck it.
Just a pile of rust was all they found on that isle that no one God, I love that song! I love that fucking song! I love that fucking song! I want to have sex with that song!
God damn! God damn!
Are you sure that's the Robotech song, or is it the Gilligan's Island season 2 theme song? Is that Reba West? Is that Reba McEntire?
I think it's Carl Masek.
Who is singing it? Do we know?
I don't know.
Why are they not on this podcast? We need to have.
I think there's a Godfather style scene where they whack everyone involved with that theme song before Robotech comes out.
Now you're making me want to sing the theme from Mask and Jason the Wheeled Warriors,
Silverhawks, Thundercats, all that.
Thundercats, good stuff. But I can't. I blew out my voice at the Hanami, so I'm going to leave all the singing to you this episode.
Okay, what's next in the can, Matt?
Well, speaking of series that begin and center on mass destruction like Macross did, because the entire Earth got wiped out by a giant ass alien nuclear/laser weapons.
Spoilers.
Oppenheimer opened in Japan on Friday.
Oppenheimer.
You may be aware of it. Oppenheimer invented the atomic weapons that were used in World War II. Did you know that?
Yeah, I heard about this movie. Didn't it come out like half a year ago everywhere else except Japan?
There was a lot of talk that, you know, it would never come out in Japan, or that Japanese people can't handle it, or something like that. The fact of the matter is that it would have been really, really epically weird to release this movie last August in the middle of like the remembrance of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And B, I'm just going to lay it on the table here. I actually really like Christopher Nolan's movies. I found this one kind of a serious snoozer, and it's very talky and very driven by characters Japanese people don't think we're going to sympathize with very much. So until it got the Oscar, I think it was very much up in the air if it even would come out here, but it did. And the reactions have been mixed.
There are some things people like about the movie and some things they don't.
Some, you know, a lot of the film critics are saying, look, just go into it with an open mind. This isn't like an insulting film or anything like that. You know, you might have really negative feelings about Oppenheimer, what he did, but this is a work of, you know, it's a film. It's a work of art. So maybe you should appreciate it in those merits. Other people just absolutely cannot get past the entire Barbenheimer controversy. I was actually at a dinner a couple of weeks ago, hanging out with some old friends, and their daughter is getting married. And, you know, so she's like in her early 20s. And at one point, just kind of unprompted, it came up that she was never going to see Barbie or Oppenheimer because she was so still upset about the Barbenheimer thing. The linking of, and this mirrors a lot of the things I was seeing online at the time it happened. People in Japan weren't upset that stupid memes were coming out from internet randos. The problem was that the actual like Warner Brothers or whoever it was account was amplifying them. And so there is a subset of people here who do remember that, who it left like a mark on them and who are still pissed off about it. So
it stained their honor. I'm watching Shogun, Matt. I'm learning a lot about Japanese culture.
Use your Shogun words. Yeah, it's interesting. Like it only just opened on Friday. So it's only been out for like, you know, 36 hours. But it'll be interesting to see what the box office returns are.
It sounds like all the screenings have been sold out. It is sounding like a hot ticket for people who go to the movies here. They are showing it in actual 70mm film at one theater in Ikebukuro. And by granny, I want to go see it. You should. I've been resisting the temptation to watch it on my phone, which is what Christopher Nolan recommends, right?
I don't want to ruin anything. The first half is really great. The second half, when Godzilla comes out, I thought was a little bit over the top.
It's not realistic enough for you at that point?
Wasn't real. realistic enough. No, it's, you know, it's really well cast. It's really well acted. Like, the settings are amazing. It's like this incredible slice of history. I just have serious, serious problems with the execution and the plotting and the themes of the second half of the film, which are kind of post-nuclear bomb. He does succeed in making atomic weapons. Sorry, spoiler alert. He does pull it off.
Okay, hater.
Okay, Masick. Anyway, maybe after you see it, we can talk about it again. It is a relevant sort of thing.
How long is it? Like 5.5 hours? Like, I have to take a whole afternoon off.
It really, really, really feels it. It drags a little bit in the third reel, as they say.
Ooh, speaking of things that drag a little bit in the third reel, Matt, this takes us to our next story. Godzilla Minus One filmmaker Takashi Yamazaki signs with CAA. Have you heard of this guy, Takashi Yamazaki, before?
Takashi Yamazaki, the acclaimed Japanese filmmaker, has recently signed with Creative Artists Agency, CAA, for representation. Yamazaki gained widespread recognition for his work on the Oscar-winning film Godzilla Minus One, where he served as the writer, director, and VFX supervisor. This film made history by securing the first ever nomination and win for a Japanese production in the visual effects category at the Academy Awards.
Kaiju Artists Alliance? CAA, is that, what is that?
Yeah, Creative Artists Agency. These are the talent agencies who secretly control the world, like the World Bank and stuff like that.
On the one hand, when a celebrated Asian filmmaker such as John Woo comes to Hollywood, you can occasionally get films like Face Off that would never have been made otherwise. On the other hand, it's going to be very interesting to see if and how Takashi Yamazaki is able to adapt his Japanese Xer, boomer, nostalgia-drenched, sentimental filmmaking style into something that broadly appeals to Western American audiences, or if he even cares to, or if... I honestly can't imagine how this is going to play out with him being a player in Hollywood now.
Did anyone know that he actually won for Best Special Effects and not Best Director?
No.
Did the people who signed him to CAA realize that he's more of an effects guy? Well, I don't know. Godzilla Minus One was great. It rocked the world. Some people liked it more than I did. That's fine. I got a text from a listener who said, upon hearing this news, quote, "Can't wait for people to figure out that all his other movies suck." I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I overheard it, Matt. Just overheard.
Well, the funny thing is, I think some of his movies, like his earliest one, which is based off of the book by an avowed ultra right winger.
Hey, we've all made movies like that before, Matt.
The Valorizing, yes, exactly. It's Valorizing the Kamikaze. Like, I think some of these films would actually cause anger in the United States. It'll be interesting to see. I've heard that, you know, he is really interested in appealing to Western audiences. So he is such a Japanese filmmaker. You know, it's making things for Japanese audiences using tropes that Japanese audiences understand. And I think he relies on those very heavily. So it'll be interesting to see if he can break out from that. You know, he wants to make something that's really going to break through, as James Woods in Videodrome would say. We've talked about this before, but this is a very kind of ascendant moment for Japanese creators and Japanese pop culture in general. It feels a little bit less like a bubble or a fad like it did in previous times when Japanese things were cool, and more like Japan is just kind of weaving itself into the fabric of pop culture. But it remains to be seen how this will, you know, really play out.
My understanding is that at your greatest moment of triumph, that's when the devil will try to tempt you, Matt. That's what happens in the Bible. There was a Godzilla Minus One screening at Lucasfilm a couple of days or weeks before the Oscars. And there's a picture of him with like Dave Filoni. They're like hanging out. Dave's wearing his Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla t-shirt. I bet you $10 to $1 to dimes he's going to do some terrible, unwatchable Star Wars thing on Disney Plus.
Godzilla and DeLorean? Is it coming?
I see Star Wars in his future. I see Marvel in his future. Maybe a Transformers movie. Like, what other kind of movies do people still make? Is there anything
else? He's a special effects guy, and the special effects scenes in Godzilla Minus One were great. They actually are some of the first all CG kaiju scenes that I've seen that I didn't feel like, wow, this...
No, wait.
What?
Wait. No, those were all done with men in suits and miniatures, right? These are Godzilla Godzilla films we're talking about. They make them in Japan, right?
Always, always. There were some of the first CG kaiju scenes I've seen that actually made me go, wow, this is actually really cool. And I think it's all because he, the director, is a special effects guy by training.
And you'll be saying that next about Baby Yoda when Takashi Yamazaki directs The Mandalorian or whatever.
Maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe he'll remake Gunhead.
Maybe he'll make the Robotech movie for Harmony Gold. They've been sitting on the rights for 40 years. He can finally get that Leonardo DiCaprio Robotech movie off the ground. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Wouldn't that be a dream come true? Next up in the news, Patrick, there's been a death in the American family. Former Senator Joseph Lieberman has passed away. You may remember him as the running mate of Al Gore in the hotly contested 2000 elections. You may be asking yourself, Patrick, why? Why, Matt, are you bringing up this old American senator on our Japanese pop culture podcast? Why?
Answer the question, Matt. Don't wait for the translator. Answer the question.
The answer is because of what I will always remember Senator Lieberman for, leading the jihad against Japanese game companies in 1993 and 1994. He convened the congressional hearings on violence in video games alongside such luminaries as, I wish I was making this up, Captain Kangaroo. And I'm not kidding. Captain Kangaroo is at his side. I've been researching this. I'm writing about this for my newsletter. So 1993 was a watershed year when the video game Mortal Kombat came out, and also Night Trap, the Dana Plato vehicle.
Sega CD, right? Wasn't that a Sega CD full motion video game?
It has been quite a leap from Pac-Man to Night Trap. About 2 months ago, I saw the video game Night Trap for the first time. It is a sick, disgusting video game, in my judgment. It's an effort to trap and kill women. Shame on people that produce that trash.
Mortal Kombat was in the arcades. It obviously did come to consoles later.
That was Bally Midway. That was an American company. Don't blame that on Japan, Matt.
These are American games, right? Both are American games, but like at this point in human history, the only like real consoles were Japanese owned. So what ended up happening was when Lieberman convened this, somebody gave Lieberman a copy of Mortal Kombat or something.
Then Captain Kangaroo took like the Mr. Moose puppet off his hand and handed him a copy of Mortal Kombat and said, check this shit out.
I'm not even kidding. Captain Kangaroo is all up in this. So Lieberman gets an illicit like videotape copy of like the fatalities in Mortal Kombat.
It's like the opening scene of Videodrome, like a bunch of Japanese guys come with a suitcase of VHS tapes.
And instead of doing what he should have done, which is ripping off his shirt and going, Mortal Kombat, he convened a congressional hearing, which is, I guess, what you do when you're a senator. It's really obvious. 1993 was also the peak, arguably, of Japan bashing in the United States. It's when Rising Sun came out. And as you may remember, Sean Connery was very, very okota at the Japanese. And I have this sneaking suspicion that when somebody slipped old Joe this video missive, he thought it would probably be a really great way to jump on the, oh, Japan is bad bandwagon. But then when they actually looked into it, they realized that Japanese video games weren't violent at all, unless you're talking about Italian plumbers jumping on mushrooms and stuff. It was the Americans. We saw the enemy and it was us. So he called all of these American, ironically, I don't think he actually called any of the makers of these games. He called in like Nintendo of America. He called in Sega of America.
American Sammy, Vic Tokai.
Vic Tokai and Captain Kangaroo. They actually got into a fist fight outside the Senate chambers. It was pretty bloody. The whole point was, he said, if you don't start regulating yourselves, we're going to regulate you. And this is where the ESRB, the ratings board, the video game rating, you know, T for teen, you know, K for kid.
A for awesome,
you know.
B for blood.
If this sounds really remarkably similar to Tipper Gore's jihad against naughty, naughty lyrics in music.
Has rock gone too far, Matt? I sometimes still ask myself that question in the wee hours of the night.
Is it true that putting a parental advisory sticker on like increases sales 100-fold for even the worst album?
Oh my God. Now, you sent me this picture of Joseph Lieberman, like in the middle of a Senate hearing, holding the Justifier gun from Lethal Enforcers, like Judge Dredd. They went after Lethal Enforcers, made by Konami, a Japanese company. So this was one of the Japanese games that was more violent than Mr. Do.
Aren't you shooting criminals in that game? I thought Americans loved that. The only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Isn't that like in the Constitution?
The Chicago Police Department needs you to go up against a slew of terrorists like you've never seen. It's so lethal, the Justifier, your side iron, comes with the game. be on the lookout for a bank job in progress, high-speed chases, ninjas in Chinatown, and volatile heat-of-the-night vision during a chemical plant sabotage. Watch out for innocent bystanders, or you may lose more than your badge in Lethal Enforcers from Konami.
Maybe the Senate was to determine what the ninjas were doing in Chinatown in that one level.
I'm just trying to figure out why Narc, my favorite video game of the 90s, wasn't in this. Do you remember that? Do you remember Narc?
I do remember Narc. I think that was another Bally Midway game, because they went hard. When they saw how much kids love the fatalities in Mortal Kombat, then it was like Smash TV, then it was like Narc.
First comes Smash TV, then comes Narc, then comes like, what, QAnon? I think it's linked to that somehow. So I was 20 years old, I guess, when in 1993, you know, when all of this stuff was going on. And do you remember more? I remember seeing Mortal Kombat and just think like cracking up at it. Like, this is the shittiest game compared to Street Fighter 2 I've ever seen. But like, I love the fact it's all of these like, you know, crappy B-grade actors dressed up like ninja punching each other in the nuts over and over again. And it had a very like Van Damme film vibe to it.
I mean, I based my whole persona on Johnny Cage, Matt. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you weren't a scorpion guy? Who was the other? Who's the ice guy? I can't even remember.
Sub-Zero.
Sub-Zero, yes. But I was more of a Raiden fan. Not Raiden.
I played Baraka, the cheap-ass guy who had, like, razor hands. So if anyone would jump at you, he would just land at them and you'd chop them up like salami, basically.
Americans invented video games, but then, like, we had that huge video game crash in 1982, 83. And so it fell to the Japanese to actually improve video games and bring them into the modern era, you know, Nintendo, Sega, all of that. But I think you can say in 1993, even though like Americans were very much also rans on the video game scene, they somehow managed to perfect video games, bringing in that whole WWF sleazy 80s movie violence, you know, ultra violence vibe back into games in a way the Japanese never would have been able to. There's something about those Bally Midway games that is just, it's such a moment.
It was totally extreme, like much of the 90s. Definitely
extreme with an X, like three X's. Extreme,
extreme pizza, extreme ninjas.
Was it as extreme as that, like Cheetos cheetah mascot with the sunglasses on?
Chester Cheetah.
Yes, man. That was pretty extreme.
So Joe Lieberman dead at 82, but his legacy lives on. They still use that old video game rating system to this day.
Yes, they do. But my favorite moment of this entire hearing is Howard Lincoln of Nintendo is like grandstanding, like to try to show how horrible Sega is and how great Nintendo is. And it's great because the Howard Lincoln, like the president of Sega of America, was hired away from Nintendo of America. So like the two, they hated each other. They just hated each other. And if you go back, this stuff is on YouTube. You can actually watch the footage. Like they're just so catty and like, oh, Nintendo would never do such a thing. We know that we're like child oriented. And then at one point, Howard Lincoln, the president of Nintendo of America, stands up and he says,
fatality, and rips his spine out.
Exactly. And actually, he freezed him into an ice block before he punched him into a million pieces. No, he says, Nintendo will never, ever release Night Trap on any system.
I love the sound of that. I love the sound of those words, Matt. And then guess what happened
25 years later, Patrick?
Night Trap came out for the Nintendo Switch.
Wah, wah, wah. What were those hearings for again? I don't even understand. So it was like, I don't know.
Help get Democrats elected or something. He was a Democrat. This is like such a Republican move. Like, I'm not really.
Well, he became an independent. He was the kind of spoiler of the Democratic Party for a long time. And that was the entire reason that Al Gore, you know, brought him on the ticket.
Well, remember who Al Gore's wife was? Tipper Gore, dude.
Tipper Gore.
PMRC, Matt. They wanted to ban rap music, Matt. They were trying to ban it in the USA.
It's funny you bring that up, because what was the first album in human history to carry that parental advisory sticker? Do you remember?
Was it 2 Live Crew?
It was 2 Live Crew. It was two. They're enshrined in history now, thanks to Tipper. Thanks, Tipper.
This group has been shaking up the airwaves all over this nation with a hit called Me So Horny. Here to perform it are the nasty boys of Rap the 2 Live Crew.
Of all this is that since the controversy surrounding 2 Live Crew began, sales of its records and singles have tripled. Some disc jockeys told me that the group never would have received this much attention had it not been singled out for censorship. Reporting from Manhattan, I'm Barbara Laskin, Fox News, Channel 5.
Fun fact, I went record shopping the other day in Shinjuku, and I was looking through the Hip Hop 12 Inches just to get kind of new material for the show. They had a lot of 2 Live Crew, Matt, and especially really? One song, the name of which I don't think I can really say on this podcast.
We can't talk about 2 Live Crew.
We want some Pokemon.
We should do a 2 Live Crew episode where we replace all of the naughty words with Pokemon names. I think we can do that. I think that's doable.
I found this awesome quote about Joseph Lieberman that says, Lieberman expressed outrage over games like Mortal Kombat, saying he really wished he could, quote, ban them constitutionally, unquote, and that they made people more violent. Matt, I'm living proof that they do, in fact, make people more violent.
I feel more violent already. You know, there's many times when I'm out on the street and I fire off a cable that, like, the snakes through my opponent so I can yank them closer and pop out their eyeballs.
Whenever I see an exploding barrel, I can't resist. I just can't help myself, you know?
Oh, man. Why can't I do pixelated violence more often? That's the thing I ask myself. I just need to scream Mortal Kombat a couple more times, but I can't because my throat is so sore from screaming at the Hanami party yesterday.
Yeah, you have 30 seconds to enter your initials, Matt. What are they
going to
be?
And they're definitely going to be ASS.
Fly? Can I do fly?
Can
do
fly. Know that's S-E-X? Me. S-E-X? Was that what you entered? I don't know. Actually, the really ironic thing is I'm one of the few people on the planet whose name isn't like Lee, who could enter their entire last name into like a 3-character, high score column, ALT.
You're not the alt guy leaving his name on the machines?
The fact of the matter is I suck so bad at video games, as many people will tell you, that I rarely got onto the high score screen. But when I did.
If you do that in Japan, people think you're an English teacher, don't they? They think you're like an alt?
Jet program? I still get emails from like jetters being like, you know, I know that you're a jetter. Can you help a fellow jetter out? And I'm like, I'm no jetter. What do I look like?
Jetter Mars?
Look like Jetter Mars too? Do I look like, yeah, do I look like, what are some other jet names in the anime
Jet
part?
Jaguar? Jet Man?
Do I look like Jet Jaguar to you?
God, I hope so.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Why couldn't Jet Jaguar be a playable character in Mortal Kombat? That would have been kind of cool. It's a degenerate game. I mean that with like total praise. It's tough. It had a vibe. It absolutely had. Wasn't it also set? It was set in some kind of weird, like gothic, like horror background that looked like it was kind of Hellraiser light.
If Clive Barker designed like a Chinese restaurant or something like that.
Yes. No, it was great.
I want to play it now. Does Andy have this? I'm sure he
I'm
has
sure
a
name. He does. I'm
He's
sure
got to play some Mortal
Don't
Kombat.
You mean you want to watch it now? Because the movie is pretty amazing, as I recall.
Christopher Lambert?
Lambert, Patrick. Lambert.
Like Camembert?
Like Camembert.
Because that movie is cheesy, that's for sure. There's a whole scene where he like psychoanalyzes all the characters. He lines them up and says, you, Johnny Cage, are afraid that people don't respect you. And you, Sonya, are strong, but inside you are weak.
It's important. You know, when we get called up before Raiden, I wonder what he'll say about us.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. Please continue to support our show. Leave us nice reviews. Tell your friends about the show. Tell them about our exciting death cult and bring them into the fold. And we'll catch you next time.
Finish him, Patrick. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye.